What's in store for your business this week at Staples?
Doing business like a CEO while saving like a CFO.
Staples has all the supplies you need to run your business like a boss at prices that'll make your bookkeeper smile.
Now that is an achievement.
Everything from markers and pens to 2019 desk calendars.
And right now, a 12-pack of Sharpie markers and an 8-pack of Expo dry erase markers are only $4.99 each.
At Staples, where there's a whole lot in store. Ends 1/19/19 in store only.
The Big Papa Online Network on Blog Talk Radio is on the air.
Hello?
Hey, Rick.
Hey, man, I'm just trying to call that other line.
So how's the weather down there in Florida?
It's not too bad. It's a little cool. It's in like high 50s, low 60s, little breeze.
So you guys always get a green Christmas down there?
Usually, man. Usually it's fairly warm. Yeah, it doesn't seem like Christmas most of the time. I'll be a little chill in there, so.
All right, so if you're ready, I guess we can get started here.
Whenever you're ready.
You're listening to Third Eye Cinema, your source for in-depth discussion of cult cinema. Tonight, one of the pioneering voices in death metal, the legendary Rick Rods, on the Big Papa Online Network on Blog Talk Radio. Cinema, your source for in-depth discussion of cult cinema. Tonight we're talking metal. As founding member and lead guitarist from Mantis and then Death, alongside Chuck Schuldiner and Cam Lee, tonight's guests set down the template for what would shortly thereafter become an entire genre. With Cam, Terry Butler, and Bill Andrews in Massacre, he kept the fires burning and crafted one of the most important and revered single albums in the history of death metal. With his thick and pummeling guitar tone and crazed whammy bar-centric leads, Rick has proved to be one of the most recognizable players in the genre, alongside such greats as James Murphy, Trey Azagthoth of Morbid Angel, and Bill Steer and Michael Amott of Carcass, lending a sound and vision to the defining Mantis, Death, and Massacre demos, followed by Death's Leprosy and Massacre's classic From Beyond. After a lengthy absence from the metal scene, Rick and founding member Terry Butler have reunited, delivering a molten slab of punching death metal that picks up where they left off in 1991. Join us as we speak to the one and only Rick Rods, only here on Third Eye Cinema. In our first segment, we'll talk about Fred and Barney, the Flintstones of death metal, and the classic Mantis and Death demo era. But first, here's a track from Massacre's From Beyond album of a favorite tune of mine dating back to the Mantis era. This is Corpse Grinder.
Thank you.
Tonight we're talking metal, and we have with us a true legend in underground metal circles. As a founding member of Mantis and later both Death and Massacre, he's been an integral part of numerous demos and CDs which effectively formed what became known as the death metal scene. Known equally for his thick tone and pummeling riffing as much as for his wildly aggressive whammy bar-centered lead guitar style, please join me in welcoming one of the most recognizable and respected guitarists in death metal, the one and only Frederick DeLillo, better known to longtime fans like myself as Rick Roz. Rick, welcome to Third Eye Cinema.
Thanks for having me, and I'm flattered by the intro. Unbelievably flattered, thank you.
Rick, you were right there at the dawn of what would become known down the road as death metal. Now, I know some people try to trace things to bands like Hellhammer and Possessed, but I think they were more influential on black metal than anything else. Really, the style and genre, the blueprint, was set by what you were doing with, quote, evil Chuck Schuldiner and Barney Cam Lee and Mantis. The Mantis demos were fairly primitive, but they formed the basis for both Death's Scream Bloody Gore and Massacres from Beyond, which were two of the linchpins of the underground and what became the death metal scene. So let's talk Mantis first. You guys were all rather young at that point. What were you, like 16?
Yeah, we were all 16. We all dropped out of high school within a two-week period and spent 7 days a week in Chuck's parents' garage.
I understand that the infamous Boombox tape decks those demos were recording on was actually yours.
Yeah, I still have it. It's down at the studio right now. I see it every time I go down there, and I smile.
Do you still, like, throw the towels over it just for old time's sake and run a tape?
No, I should do that for shits and giggles. It's part of my language.
This is seriously lo-fi stuff. You know, not only didn't you have a recording deal, you didn't even work up the cash to record in a proper studio with an engineer or producer. This was basically just a bunch of teenagers full of piss and vinegar, throwing a towel over a commercial-grade tape recorder and plasma in Chuck's garage.
That's it. That's how we remember the songs when we were. That's basically our pre-production of writing, if you want to call it that, at that time. Well, for one thing, there was no studios around that would know how to record that style of music, let alone that were cheap enough at that time.
Right.
And we couldn't even get a local gig because it was like that whole time period when we were doing that, it was like cover bands, all cover bands in the Orlando, Florida area that were booked by a booking agent. There was no original bands going on. There was no way to get a gig other than renting a place or Nasty Savage being kind enough.
Right. I've heard that from a lot of people. And you did what we all did in those days, you know, dual taping your demos to pass around or sell at shows among friends and in the tape trading circuit. And that in and of itself probably seems weird to today's kids with the internet and easy access to just about anything ever released. The days where you had to drive for miles to find that one import record store that carried the underground stuff, or where you had to send all stuff back and forth by snail mail to people you never met in Europe or South America. And you never knew what you were going to get sometimes. It's not like now where you could just hit YouTube or iTunes and listen to samples or whatever. It was all like reviews and fanzines and word of mouth. So it's a very different experience.
You're 100% right on that, and let alone 100 generations of that tape that, you know, getting traded and duplicated and triplicated and quadruplicated and however you want to say it.
Yeah, on that point, I mean, it was just such a different world. There's nothing to compare that to now. And like you're saying, the lo-fi demos, because people just, you know, okay, I got a demo here, and you might have got it from 15 people down the road. So by the time you're getting it, it's all hiss. You got a check done volume way the hell up. There's no bass on the thing. But you were happy to have it, because it's like, wow, whoever heard this band?
Right, and there was no bass in the band at that time either. It was just two guitar players and a drummer.
Right. So,
so if you wanted bass, you weren't getting it anyway.
So how did you meet up with Chuck and Barney in the first place, and how did you get your respective nicknames?
I pretty much made my own name up, to be honest with you. As far as Evil Chuck, I really don't know. I think that was Mark and John from the Guillotine, little fanzine from Orlando, that kind of like gave him that nickname. I really don't know.
And how about Barney?
That's his name. That's his real name. Barney Camelani Lee, yes. And I'm Frederick Donald DeLillo, so that's why we were known as the Fred and Barney of death metal. We were the Flintstones of death metal. That's World War Corrigan. That's quoted.
Wow. The funny thing about Chuck is most of the stories I heard was that he was pretty laid back as a rule. So the idea of him being evil was kind of funny in the first place.
Yeah, very, very far from evil, like in general, as far as it, no, very laid back. Very. When he came back from Frisco, he totally had that whole kind of like valley kind of thing going. And it was cool. He's a chill dude, man. And he was my friend, you know what I mean? So from a teenage standpoint. So, and he moved on and did what he felt like doing with the band. That's his prerogative.
But how'd you meet up with those guys? Were you on the same school together?
Well, me and Cam were going to the same high school. I met Chuck at a backyard party in like late 82. We just somehow started chit-chatting and we're talking Raven and Venom and totally hit it off as far as Priest, Maiden. But as far as like metal at that time, underground stuff, we kind of hit it off and had a lot of, you know, similarities in that. So we just started chit-chatting and got together, and then that was it, man. It was me and Cam dropped out of high school, and Chuck dropped out like a week later. And like I said, we were 7 days a week. Renting his parents.
And especially at that time period, I mean, doing stuff as heavy as you guys wound up doing was really rare.
It was all from influence, bro, you know what I mean? From Slayer and Venom, and then, you know, as far as, there wasn't like a lot of technicality in that, but we were all fans of Merciful Fate and Testament, all that. Well, Testament wasn't out at that time, but but there was a, just, it was more influence meets a little bit of originality, I guess, because we really didn't know what to do. We were just creating that we felt was cool, you know what I mean? It was like,
exactly,
we were inventing something, which I don't look at it in that way, because it's all influence, man. If it wasn't for Venom, Bathory, Slayer, even back to Metallica and that stuff, I wouldn't have been playing that stuff, you know what I mean? So,
did Bathory actually predate you? Because I thought that they came around the same time, maybe a little after.
I want to think he had something out in 82. I could be wrong.
No, yeah, I remember,
but definitely Hellhammer as well. I left them out. Hellhammer was around in the first, you know, couple of Venom records, and definitely the first two Slayer records. So I could be wrong on the Bathory thing, because he came in that whole between 83 and 84 as well. So that kind,
right,
of kind of a blur.
There were actually two versions of the Death My Battle demo released, and there was another rehearsal that wound up on that recent CD release. Tracklist was pretty close on all three, with everyone containing Legion of Doom, Death by Metal, and Evil Dead, but one version added the song Mantis, and the rehearsal dropped Power of Darkness, which was on both versions of the demo, for something called Rise of Satan. There's also another version of the demo that appeared on the Zero Tolerance release that substitutes Beyond the Unholy Grave, so it's just kind of a mess how many times you guys released what would appear to be the same demo overall.
Right, I don't know if that was actually us, because I don't remember doing that, man. I mean, we had the Death by Metal demo, and then there was two versions, kind of, sort of. We did one in a studio, and where there's, like, no drums at all, except for when he does a fill, and just, like, thunderous toms come out of nowhere. But the main one was done on the Jambox. I don't know where all the other stuff came up. People could have went ahead and put all this stuff out from rehearsals. Dude, I'm clueless on the re-releases of all that stuff, so I have no idea.
Yeah, because it's kind of baffling, so I was hoping you'd have some insight, but I guess you're as clueless as the rest of us. Chuck was apparently fairly volatile, because even around this time, he was already thinking in terms of dumping everyone in the band and starting over. I understand he'd already parted ways with you and Cam before getting back together with you for both the Reign of Terror and Infernal Death demos. So what was going on here? And did the relations between the three of you change radically between the, quote, breakup of Mantis and his pulling you back into the fold for Death?
It was just pretty much teenage. I really don't know. We didn't cause it. I have no clue. I can't even really answer that either. I just know that we split up for like 2 weeks, and then we were back together again under a different name. So, so that's pretty much about it right there. So, and that was Chuck's doing. We all started it together. It's three of us, and Cam was singing 80%, 90% of the songs. Chuck was singing like two or three, and then, you know, Cam was singing the rest. So yeah. I really don't. I don't know.
There was a really weird interlude there where Chuck wrote of two guys from Genocide who later became Repulsion to play with himself and Cam, and I guess you walked?
Who walked?
You.
No, I was fired. That was my first time being fired. I guess Chuck was wanting to get a bass player, and I guess whoever the bass player was, Scott or whatever, had a friend that was a guitar player, so they both wanted to come down. So I was pretty much let go by the Guillotine. John DeMarc from Guillotine Magazine came out and told me at a Knights of Columbus show where I was let go. I think it was the night we played, too. I think we played with Tempt or something. I don't know.
Wow.
But, yeah, so then I guess those two guys came down and I was let go, and then Cam hung out for a little bit, and then I think he's the one that walked. I don't think he was let go. I believe he left.
Unbelievable.
But
yeah.
then it all came full circle, and then I was let go again. Anyway, I won't get ahead of the – I'll let you ask.
It's unbelievable, because I was never able to reconcile this on the outside, as a fan, that Chuck always seemed to be laid back. I'd always heard he was laid back, and he seemed like a nice guy, and yet he had this crazy thing of, like, people in and out of the band. You're fired. This one's fired. This one walked. I have no idea what was going on in this guy's head. So do you have any more insight, having known him and been a friend of his?
Well, definitely all started out more of a friendship in the beginning, but I really don't know, man. You know, people are people, and they have their own quirks. You know what I mean? I'm not one to, what are you going to do, fight it?
So what are you going to do?
No, no, dude, you can't fire me. I'm staying in the band. You can't do that. And I'm not one to freaking go at war with something like that. Even this, when it happened later on, I didn't go at war, you know what I mean? But I was never let go by Chuck himself. So it was always somebody else let me. He never, like, you know, you would think a friend, and it's not really that big of a business. It's not like it was, you know what I mean? But I really don't know, man. I couldn't even tell you. I just escalated, you know what I mean? I wasn't at a caliber of guitar playing that he wanted in his band.
Wow.
I'm not super tech guy. I'm more meat potatoes and kind of, AC/DC, Black Sabbath, but death metal, speed metal style, so.
Exactly. Just to close the book on death, I want to hammer home how important a part you played in the history of death metal, because some of the songs you worked out with Chuck and Cam and Mantis and the death demos wound up as part of Scream Bloody Gore. I mean, you have Evil Dead, Infernal Death, Baptized in Blood, and even that mysterious Beyond the Unholy Grave that you were talking about before, which wound up as a bonus track on one of the reissues. And, of course, Corpse Grinder became a Massacre favorite and wound up on From Beyond. You know, I have to say, when it comes to death metal, beyond James Murphy, Trey from Morbid Angel, and maybe Bill and Mike Amott from Carcass, you're really one of the most recognizable and beloved guitarists in the genre. Your style, we can pick it out instantly.
I'm flattered once again. You're killing me with the flattery, but thanks, man. I'm flattered. Just another guy, though.
And, you know, we're not talking like Kerry King here. You can actually play in between all that super aggressive whammy bar action with the dive bombs and such. So what kind of equipment are you using to take all that abuse? Because, you know, back when, I tried doing a lot of that stuff in my first band, and I wound up having to put a mahogany block in there to lock the action in place because it totally destroyed the springs. I guess you're using, like, a Floyd Rose system on a PC Rich?
Yeah, it's pretty much all I use is just the original Floyd Rose.
Wow.
Nothing fancy, no heavy-duty springs or anything like that. I just used three springs in the back, one up the center, and two on an angle, and that's it.
And never really...
No, as far as it staying set up and pretty much staying in tune and or anything like that, no, one's never come apart on me, you know, and I beat the crap out of them.
You always get that incredibly fat tone, and the BC Rich doesn't always offer that. I'm thinking of people like Lita Ford, Lizzie Borden's band, Dave Mustaine. They're all fairly thin sounds, whereas you get this incredibly beefy, thick, and chunky tone. Is that really all just coming from the BC Rich?
I could pretty much get the same tone almost, I mean, depending on the wood of the guitar and this and that. The only other thing that I add to anything else in the rig is just a Boss, standard Boss Super Overdrive, and that's it. You know what I mean? No fancy preamps in the guitars. Any of the preamps that are on there, they're all unhooked. It's just an 81 EMG, a Super Overdrive pedal going through. Well, now I'm using Mesa Boogie, but then I was using Marshall. I think it's just all on how your settings are, and my settings are really standard. You know, bass is all the way up, mids all the way off, trebles between 10 o'clock and 1 o'clock, gains all the way up, presence is all the way up, and then your volume. That's it. Go.
Wow.
Seriously, that's it, period. You can look at my settings on any head, they'll all be the same.
Fascinating. How soon after Cam walked out in death did the two of you get together for Massacre? Because it didn't seem like a lot of time elapsed there. It was all kind of like boom, 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 one thing after the other.
Yeah, it was kind of crazy. I guess he was offered the Massacre gig. Bill Andrews, who basically is the one that started Massacre, along with Alan West from Obituary.
Right.
It was Bill Andrews, Alan West, a guy named Mark Brent was singing at the time, and then Mike Borders was playing bass. For what I know, Cam was brought into the band. Alan was still there. So it was Alan West, Cam Lee, Bill Andrews, and Mike Borders were jamming. And Cam had called me one day and said, hey, I joined this band Massacre in Tampa. What do you think about moving out here and joining the band? So I thought about it. I talked to my girlfriend, and she was like, okay, cool. So we moved out to Tampa, and I joined Massacre. And then later on, about a month or so down the road, Alan West was let go by Bill Andrews, and then we were a four-piece. Right. Mom's home, so...
So in the early days of Massacre, when you released the two demos, Aggressive Tyrant and the Chamber of Ages, first of all, you did a track called Mutilated. Was this an earlier version of what Chuck put out as Mutilation on Scream Bloody Gore? And if so, was this something you were working on with him before the split?
No, that's a totally different song. And that song was written by Alan West, not by me. I was not on that demo. But
right.
You're bringing up Scream Bloody Gore, Mutilation, all that. I mean, there is a lot of my riffs on that record. I just wasn't credited for him, so that's all good.
That's kind of what I figured, because, you know, it was so soon after the split. I'm like, you know, I'm thinking there's more
there's
here.
There's a lot on Scream Bloody Gore, man. But there's plenty on Spiritual Healing, too. But, you know, what can you do, bro? You just go
exactly.
With it. I just, you know.
I'm not trying to stir up shit here. I'm just trying to, you know, get the bottom of
this.
No,
there's no shit to stir. It's all, no, you're not stirring anything, bro. I've got nothing to hide, and I have nothing to add as far as, like, you know, make it seem like it's so terrible. It's just, you know, whatever happened, you know.
That's it.
Going with it.
Just trying to get to the bottom of all this.
Right, right.
You're listening to Third Eye Cinema with our special guest tonight, Rick Ross. Coming up, we talk to Massacre Demos, interviewing you with Chuck and Death for Leprosy, and back to Massacre for the second coming album here on Third Eye Cinema.
Hi, this is Udo Dorfner, singer of UDO, and you listen to the show Third Eye Cinema.
Hi, this is James Murphy. You're listening to Third Eye Cinema.
So coming up next, we talk to Massacre Demos, Rick's reunion with Chuck and Death for a legendary Leprosy album, and heading back to Massacre for the long-unreleased Second Coming album, only here on Third Eye Cinema. But first is a track from Rick and Death. This is Leprosy. you really cycled through members at the time. You already mentioned some, but you had two bass players. There was another vocalist before Cam joined, two second guitar players, one of whom, like you mentioned, was Alan West, who played on Aggressive Tyrant and would go on to form Obituary with the Tardy Brothers and later 6 Feet Under with Chris Barnes from Cannibal Corpse. So what happened with Alan? Did he get laid off before you got there? Or?
No, we actually did a couple of rehearsals together. And then, like I said, Bill Andrews let Alan go for what reason? I had nothing to do with it. I got spit on by Alan when we did our first go.
Wow.
But I had nothing to do. I didn't fire Alan West. I've got no punches to pull, you know what I mean? So, and I've got no shit to stir. I'm going to tell you honest answers. I might give you a little more information that you might not know about, but it's truth.
Was it from the audience?
Oh, yeah, he was from the audience, totally. And I just took it and just kept playing.
Wow.
What do you do, man? What are you going to do? Go down and beat the guy up?
Right.
Get back on stage and play again? Come on. I'm not that cool.
Well, that, like, Axl Rose bullshit.
I see you took the word. I didn't want to drop any names, but I just said I'm not that cool.
If you want to call that cool, hey.
Right, exactly. There you go.
I also understand that Terry Butler, who we'll get to in a minute, joined Massacre after the demos had already been recorded, and I don't believe there's any Massacre material with him on it from that period.
Massacre is Bill Andrews's man, 100%. Okay. He gave us his blessing to continue it now. Terry was just a very good friend of Billy's, and Bill let Mike Borders go, the original bass player, and brought Terry in.
But this was after the demos were recorded, so there's really, from that
correct.
Time period,
yeah.
No Massacre material with Terry on.
No, Mike Borders is playing bass on all of that, even on the one, the Aggressive Tyrant demo with Bill, Cam, and Alan. It was Mike Borders on bass, and then also on the other one that we did. Yeah, Borders was on that one as well, and then Butler came in
Chamber.
After all of that.
Right around that time, I gather you got a call from Chuck to rejoin Death, at least in terms of yourself, Terry, and Bill Andrews. Tell us a bit about the recording of Leprosy and this whole rubber band relationship you, Chuck, and Cam really seem to have.
Well, Chuck didn't contact me in any way, shape, or form, so
okay.
Let me go ahead and clarify this story for you. Massacre was going to play a show in Tampa opening for Megadeth and Overkill. We get to the show with all our gear, and we're not doing the show. We were told by the promoter they put on another band, so we got shit canned like at the last minute. So I'm wandering around the venue going, I'm just burnt. So in my mind, I'm like, okay, I'm done with Massacre. I had no plans to do anything else, Another 10 or 15 minutes later, some guy that I don't even know comes up to me and goes, hey, Rick, did you hear that Chuck's back in town? And I'm like, no. This is right before Christmas, 80. The Scream was already out, so.
Right, 87, 88?
No, it was before 88. Okay. It was like late 86, early 87. I can't remember where it was. So anyway, I just took the information in, didn't say anything to Terry, didn't say anything to Bill, didn't say anything to Cam. Robbie Goodwin, a good friend of ours that we met in Tampa, was playing guitar with the band as well at that time. And I just went home, and the next day I just went to Chuck's house. I just showed up at his door. And he opened the door and was like, yeah, and the look on his face was, what the heck are you doing? You know, like, and I was like, hey, dude, I don't mean to show up at your house, like, unannounced, blah, 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 blah. I could see you're not ready to have any kind of conversation. I said, there's some stuff to talk about if you like. I said, give me a buzz, blah, 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 blah. Next day he calls me, and I go sit down with him, and I tell him, hey, I just left Massacre. I heard that you were back in town. I heard that Chris isn't coming down. You know, Chris Reifer at the time was 16, I believe, and still in high school and living at home. So he wasn't making a move to Florida. So Chuck pretty much had a record finished and no band. So I'm talking and I'm telling him, I say, hey, man, I just left Massacre. Nothing was happening, blah, 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 blah. And I said, I have a drummer and a bass player if you're interested in putting something together and giving it a shot. And he gave me the thumbs up. So I called Bill and Terry. They about wet themselves. They, you know, it was all out of the blue, bro. Period.
Wow.
To him, he had complete control of it. He's the one that had the record out. I offered him a band. He already had a relationship. I guess he trusted my whatever on Bill and Terry because he didn't know Bill and Terry from them.
Nice.
That's how that all came about, bro. We got together and we rehearsed and rehearsed and rehearsed all the Scream Bloody Gore stuff. We went and toured Bloody Gore record and wrote a good portion of the Leprosy record tour.
Right.
And then came back and just did our standard rehearsals and finished up the Leprosy record and recorded that. That's pretty much how that happened.
This is why I do these things, because there's details that's like, you know, I thought I knew a lot about this stuff. And when I talked to a lot of other metalheads from back in the day, they were like amazed how much I know. And then I find out stuff like this. I was like, I had no idea how this all happened.
No, that's factually how that happened. Nobody even knew that that Chuck was back in town, that I was going to talk to him. They didn't know that I taught him. Cam never knew, bro. All of a sudden, he knew we were in Death and Massacre was done.
And knowing Cam, I bet he wasn't happy.
I don't knows? I'm sure that's a huge grudge he's held forever. But then we got Masker back together after that and did the From Beyond record. You know what I mean? So,
right.
Hey, what can you do?
Exactly. So getting back to this whole time period here, did Chuck already have the material written and brought you guys in as session players, or was this all just developed like a real band collaboration?
Oh, no, me and Chuck wrote the whole record together. We co-wrote it together. No, he didn't have any songs. No, he just had Scream Bloody Gore written, bro. That's it. For me, Scream Bloody Gore was written and recorded. We and then went on tour and did it. And me and him basically got together daily, just like we did back in the day. Still with the jam box, man, a dual cassette player, you know, playing a riff. Play the riff back, play another riff on top of it, just sitting in his room. Yeah, we just co-wrote it together. He wrote Lever City and Pulled the Plug on his own. I wrote Primitive Ways on my own, and then all the other stuff was co-wrote 50-50 pretty much, which I believe that's the only time that ever happened, Death Record. I think he wrote everything else from then on out. I think he might have had a couple of riffs.
Well, that actually shows a light of what I'm about to say, because I know this is a controversial opinion, but that actually makes perfect sense of what I'm about to tell you, because I always felt that Leprosy was the last album he put out worth listening to, because while Spiritual Healing did introduce James Murphy to the metal world, I thought Chuck seemed like, it was almost like he was afraid of him, like he would take more solos than James, he'd build these overly complex song structures. Yeah, it felt to me like a Chuck Schuldiner solo record, a pattern that would worsen with every successive release, despite getting some really good players, like the guys from Cynic and Sadus, and Andy LaRocque from King Diamond, Gene Hogan from Dark Angel. No, I don't know, maybe it's just me, but...
No, that's a good way of putting it, but, I mean, the players were great.
Oh, yeah.
He got top-notch players to put on it, but he was pretty much writing everything.
That's what I mean. It's like you get these fantastic players in there, and they're not really getting used. I mean, that's the way it sounds to me, anyway. I know a lot of people disagree with this. So what happened this time? You had brought the entire band back to Massacre. You reunited with Cam Lee, and you got signed to Earache for one of my favorite underground albums ever, which is From Beyond. But there was a bit of a weird interlude there first. So let's talk about the second coming. It looks like you and Cam got back together, but with Joe Cangelosi, who just did an album or two with Whiplash, and somebody named Butch Gonzalez. So who was Butch? Because he didn't seem to do anything else beyond this album, but he was really good.
He was just a friend of mine that played in a local metal band called Tempter. He played with Jen and the Genitortures for a little bit early on in the career before any record deals or anything, just locally. Right. We were just good friends. Just hung out a lot, never really wrote any music or jammed together, but always I'm into funk and that kind of stuff as well, which he's a huge funk player. So we kind of incorporated something, which shouldn't have been entitled Massacre, and it really didn't come out. But Joey was a good friend of mine. He came down, moved down from New York and stayed with me, and we jammed in my garage and wrote stuff. And then all of a sudden that Death Tour happened without Chuck, and I get a call from Terry from Germany. And I'm like, oh, really? So we could put the original Masker lineup back together again. So first time in my life I had to let somebody go, which was Joe Cangelosi and Butch Gonzalez.
Right.
But we're still friends, and they didn't take it hard. They didn't take it bad or get pissed off at me or anything like that. Like I said, we're still in contact and friends, and that's how that all came about. And, of course, I called Earache, and they were doing cartwheels and backflips because it was the original band. And because, I mean, if we were to put a record out just to mean straight-up honesty, it wouldn't have been a Masker record. It would have sounded kind of suicidal meets, I don't know. It wasn't death or speed metal in any way, shape, or form, along with the Promise record, which was a mistake as well. But, you know, you got to go along with what you have. You got a singer that's getting into goth and he's depressed about his girlfriend. You got to go with it. Hey, he was my friend. He was my friend.
I really like the second coming. I mean, it's nothing like From Beyond, but it's like you pointed out about Butch. He's got that kind of funky bass thing going on. Joe's a great drummer, and, you know, it works. It's different, but it works.
A little too many parts. And a lot of people said, man, it's like Rush metal because there's a lot of parts, man. I couldn't play that right now. I'd be, like, lost. I'd be like, what?
It's true. It's very busy.
Dude, we just went in the garage just like we did in Mantis back in the day, and that's all we did. It's writing, three of us, me, Butch, and Joey, just sitting in there and just writing riffs and playing off of each other. And, you know, Butch is a totally different kind of a player, so it was really cool to be able to play some kind of metal sound and stuff with something different over top of it. So, great guys. Had a blast, bro.
You mentioned about getting that call from Terry from Europe. So,
that
reminded me, did Chuck fire you and continue on in Europe with the other two guys for the tour? Is that what happened?
No, I was let go. He hired Murphy, I guess, because the Spiritual Healing record was done already. Spiritual Healing was recorded, but Murphy didn't go with Terry and Bill. So I really don't know. You'd have to ask Terry what happened. The only thing that I know factually that happened is that Bill and Terry, they were contracted. Death was contracted, tours booked, deposits had been paid, blah, 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 blah. Terry and Bill went to Chuck's house. He was home, and he wouldn't answer the door, period. He was going through personal issues. They saw him peeking out of the blinds in his house, and they're leaving. They have to go. It's time to go. And he just didn't answer. So they had to fulfill the obligation for him, And, you know, because it was through a booking agent. And the booking agent said, you guys have to go. So, okay, Death went to Europe without Chuck, which is kind of, you know, unbelievable. But, hey, it happened, period. You know what I mean? And Louis, the drummer for Devastation out of Texas, was singing. And this guy, Walter, that I know, can't remember his last name, who was played in some Texas metal band back in the day, he was playing guitar. Right. So they went out with one guitar player and a drummer singing and Terry and Bill. Hey, but they did the tour. Nobody got beat up. I don't remember Terry saying that they got booed at all. The tour was successful. They finished the whole tour. I heard that Chuck called halfway through and they said no. So they denied him his own band, but they knew they were fired anyway. They were like, okay, let's just continue what we're doing, get it done, and you know, Terry would know more about that. But yeah, so Terry calls me, tells this to me, and I got a little chuckle out of it. I was like, what? You're doing what? So he told me the whole story. He's like, dude, he wouldn't come to the door. He wouldn't answer the door. I believe him. Terry's not a liar. So he goes, so what's going on, Masker, man? Obviously, we're not going to be in Death when we get back. So there's no grudges there. I'm like, fuck yeah, dude. So I told him about Joey and Butch. I'm like, hey, I'm going to have to call the label and I have to tell Joey and Butch sorry. And hopefully they won't beat my ass because they're big guys, man. And that's how it happened. They came back home and we started right from beyond.
It's fascinating because I actually remember that tour. They were touring by themselves and Chuck wasn't there. I forgot all about it until you mentioned the phone call from Europe.
Yeah, it's crazy. Louis, the drummer for Devastation, was singing. It's unbelievable. Little short, little Indian, Mexican guy, no offense to culture or anything like that. Long, dark black hair down to his rear end, singing and doing windmills. And hey, crazier things have happened, I'll tell you that. But it was a successful tour for him. So, that's what was meant to be, man. It happened.
Getting back to the Second Coming for a second. This wasn't the same kind of classic we get shortly thereafter with From Beyond, but why didn't Earache care for this one? Because, you know, when it was released a few years back, like I said, I thought it was a damn good record.
Oh, they never said they didn't care for it. We just totally scrubbed that because, you know, it was time to
go back
to basic. Oh, yeah. Earache didn't. We already had the deal, bro. Before Bill and Terry even called, with Joey and Butch, me and Cam had already signed a deal with Earache Records. We already had a deal between the two of us. We already been signed. Bill and Terry were still in Death. We got Joey and Butch in the band. They came down to show some rehearsals. We did a friend of a friend did a favor and put us in the studio. That's just a live to two track thing. That's why there's no solos, nothing on that. That was like push record, and whatever you play is what you're getting. There's no double track guitars, no double back vocals, no editing, nothing. This is what you get is what you get. So they didn't deny it at all, bro. I'm sure it would have probably thrown them for a little loop. Or everybody for a loop. But
yeah, I mean, you could tell it's not a final production master, but nonetheless, it sounds relatively complete. You know, it's cohesive enough.
That was just experimental with different players, you know what I mean? More or less, when Butch and Joey just played really good together. It would have been a really cool kind of, like I said, it would have been better with a different name, but it didn't come, it was still released under Masker. I personally would have called it something else with members of, you know what I mean? But hey, what can you do? Promise came out. It was bad enough.
You're listening to Third Eye Cinema with a special guest tonight, Rick Ross. Coming up, we talk From Beyond, only here on Third Eye Cinema.
You're listening to Third Eye Cinema. Enjoy the day.
Okay. Here you start out.
Hi, this is Mirai from Psy, and you are listening to Third Eye Cinema.
Hi, this is Dr. McCannibal from Psy. You're listening to Third Eye Cinema.
In our next segment, we talk about one of the greatest albums in death metal, Massacres from Beyond, and the records that follow, Inhuman Condition, Promise, and The Road to Reunion. But right now, here's one off The Second Coming. This is Bleed to Death. Now you got the whole Massacre gang circa 1987, or the gang from Leprosy minus Chuck of Fur, back together for From Beyond. So let's speak to this one for a minute because it's a classic. You carried over Chamber of Ages and From Beyond from the second Massacre demo, and of course Corpse Grinder from the Death Reign of Terror demo for this album, which, you know, while it showed up relatively late in the game, it became one of the most important records in death metal right to this day.
You had some incredible production on there. I mean, I would have thought that mixing Colin Richardson and Earache with Scott Burns and Morrisound would have been something of a no-no, because, you know, Scott generally worked with RC, which is Roadrunner and Combat Bands, and of course Colin was based in England, and yet it happened. It was recorded at Morrisound with Colin producing and Scott engineering. So how did you pull that one off?
As far as the Colin Richardson thing, we had no control over that. Earache set that up and told us that's who was going to be doing the record. We didn't know the guy, you know what I mean? I just remember doing some mixes, and Scott Burns is in there, and we walk out of the room, and Colin walks in there, and Colin walks out of the room, and then Scott comes out of the room and goes, "Hey, Rick, come here." I come back in the room, and all the mixes are zeroed out. He said, "Colin just came in here and just zeroed everything out on all of those." I was like, "What?
Why?"
I don't know, dude. I mean, I can't really honestly say, and no disrespect to Colin Richardson, because he's really become successful since then. He really didn't do anything.
So it was all you and
Scott?
It
was pretty much Scott Burns and the band. I mean, I remember we had a guitar tone. He didn't like it. I was like, dude, okay, but all right, we'll try what you want. And it was horrible. And we spent hours and hours and hours and hours. And I'm like, dude, can we just go back to what we had before? I'll never forget that, dude. And we did, and that's it. I don't remember him really doing anything else other than zeroing out the board a couple of times and just going, "Oh, my God." And spending 4 or 5 hours on a guitar tone that we ended up going back to the original tone. He just didn't like the sizzle. I'm like, dude, that's just there. It's not going away. I said, then I was using a preamp in the BC Rich, and I was using different pickups, and I was like, dude, that's just a really hot signal.
Right.
I'm sorry that it's sizzly. I said, without that sizzle, I can't freaking sail a freaking harmonic for a freaking 2 minutes. So
it's fascinating.
He was really trying to clean it up, as I think what he was trying to do. He was trying to make it clean. He really is good at what he does. He's a mad scientist, dude. Especially now, I've seen him work with the Trivium guys in the studio, and yeah, that's too much for me. I'm too basic for that, dude.
Back in the day, anyway, Colin was always, I always remembered him for the two Carcass records, Necroticism and Heartwork. You know, those were like great production. But that was really
right.
It. And also, you know, Earache records tend to have more of a hiss to them and whatever, whereas Scott Burns was just like, he was like God to me. I was like, everything he did, I was like, oh, yeah, this is the way something's supposed to sound. And the fact that you got both of them together in the same room, that kind of crisscrossing labels, crisscrossing studios and producers, I'm like, is this why this album sounds so good? It's fascinating.
I really don't know. I mean, Scott knew what he was, but we really didn't do anything fancy. You know what I mean? We sounded the same on that record than we did live. All the sounds were the same. So I remember a couple of things. But, you know, Scott was great. I mean, we worked with Scott back in front of the Levesey record. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He was engineering all that. That's when Scott was, before he even became Scott. So yeah, that's a lot of history there.
The funny thing is that Leprosy, as good as it sounds, didn't sound anything like From Beyond. From Beyond had this incredible, I mean, I know it's part of its guitar tone and part of its cam and the harmonizers and whatever else, but it's really...
No, he didn't use any harmonizers, not on that record. Nope,
nothing.
That's double, triple tracking. So he actually stated on there that there was no vocal effects, and that's correct. He did use them on In Human Condition, though. From Beyond, no. And I'd be one to tell you if I'd throw him under the bus if he did, and he didn't. No, there's no harmonizers on there.
That record and Obituary's Cause of Death were like, you know, the death metal productions for me. You listen to them and it's just like, I can sit there and listen to the entire album and just have it in your headphones and just suck in all the sound. Because, you know, even the incidental stuff in the background, it's like, oh my God, this is so well done. So I figured there had to be something special about this. Circumstances of making it.
No. That's what I remember, bro. I don't remember Scott or O'Connell doing any crazy magical tricks in there or anything. You know, it was pretty much just plug in and get some sounds and go. Like I said, you know, Scott was happy with the guitar tone, as far as I know. I don't come in there I'm not some big some Hitler guy coming in that tells things need to be run and stuff like that. So I pretty much kind of like go along with it. Like with Chuck, we tried, he went to Galleon Kruger and he wanted me to get this Galleon Kruger that he got. So I did that, you know, and I kind of was like a team player trying to keep the same kind of guitar tone. But I just have a heavier hand, bro. I dig in a lot more. I muse really, really hard and I dig in really hard. I don't, you know what I mean? So that can make a bit of a difference, too, I guess, if somebody's playing light and not, you know, properly muting or technique. And everybody plays different, you know what I mean? So I think the combo of everything, which I think helps your sound.
And the next thing I was going to say was that, you know, not only are the songs great and they distill the best elements, what you were doing with Death Mantis and the Massacre demos, but you brought something further to the table because the sound was so powerful. You know, I don't think your guitar tone ever sounded better, nor did Cam's vocals. So it's amazing that it was just to you guys, just like, another day, you know?
Right. I try not to analyze it. If it sounds good, then I'm cool with it. If it sounds like crap, I'll let them know, you know what I mean? But I guess it was good for what it was for the time. I mean, you're flattering, bro. You're flattering the crap out of me, so I don't know how to take it. I'm like, really?
Then you did the Inhuman Condition EP after this, and I guess it was more the same, but it seemed a lot weaker by comparison despite having a great cover. So did some of the spirit get lost, or was it really just down to the change in production?
I think that was really rushed. I don't think the songs had enough pre-production time. We were kind of like rushed in to put something out. And then with More Sound, we were kind of rushed in to be kind of, well, not rushed by them, but when we went into the studio, we were kind of like guinea pigs. They just got this, just the new SSL board, and they hadn't even used it yet. And then we had somebody else, other than it wasn't even one of the Morse brothers or anything like that, or Scott. It was another guy that kind of was, I would say it had a lot to do with not enough knowledge of the board, who is doing it, and knowledge in general as a producer on who is doing it, lack of pre-production on the band and structuring of the songs properly, and yeah, and then we added another member, and I kind of lost a lot of oomph when that happened, and I went along with it, man. I just thought, and I've got nothing against playing with another guitar player, did with Chuck Fuller, but when things aren't really like proper and somebody doesn't pick the same way and things sound totally like out of sync, and it's not fun.
I hear you.
You know what I mean? And it's because it's somebody's friend, you know what I mean? I don't want to be a jerk, or, you know, I really don't, because I went along with it and I did it, you know. But hey, so I think it's a combination of a lot of things, man. Definitely a lack of pre-production and rehearsal on getting songs structured right. And I think this was kind of like trundle along and, okay, here's some parts. And, you know, Terry has a song on there, and this and that. But we never really got together and just sat there and put a song together and made it a song. So
I also thought the Venom.
But it's a great cover, and I got to meet Cronus, and that was freaking killer.
Yeah, I was just about to get to that because, you know, I also thought the Venom cover was a bit of a lost opportunity because you certainly had the ability to put a lot of extra power and force behind the more messy sound that Venom was known for, but it seemed like you guys were guests on your own recording. You know, I don't blame you for wanting to do a track with Kronos, but what was it like working with him?
Oh, it was great, man. I went and picked him up from the airport. He stayed at my house. I cooked him dinner. We drove out to More Sound and hung out. We played and showed him the track, and he put on the bass, went in there. He played his. We told him, go, dude.
So you just backed off because it's Kronos and let him do what he wanted to do.
Well, I'm just saying, he was playing all the bass parts. Terry didn't care. You know what I mean? We had the drums and all the guitars already done, so I was just like, hey, bro, just go ahead and, you know, do your thing. He went in there, did his bass stuff, and then did the vocal tracks, and it was it. No, it was killer. He brought me a bunch of 7-inches and signed all my stuff, and yeah, dude, it was great. Brought me all kinds of rare vinyl and Venom stuff, and I was like, dude, you rule. And then he signed all my stuff. How can you beat that?
Wow, nice.
Great. Then I got to see him on the cruise again, so when we did 70,000 tons, so it was good to see him.
Did you guys get to go out drinking? You know, do some pub crawling with him?
Nah, I wasn't. I'm not a drinker, bro. Back then I wasn't. I mean, I sip whiskey now as an older guy, but back then I was no nothing, smoked cigarettes, and that was it.
Okay.
No, he hung out at my house and stayed at the house, and I fed him, and then we went to More Sound, did the record, came back to my house. He slept the next morning, and I took him to the airport. That's cool. It, man. His Cronus for 48 hours.
There you go. You can't beat
it
that.
It was great, dude. No, it was killer.
Now, you knew this one was coming. You already kind of hinted at it. What was the deal with Promise?
Like I said, man, that was me and Cam. He was my friend. He got really into the Typo Negative thing and the whole kind of gothy kind of vampire thing. And I just kind of went along with it. You know what I mean? And that's
right.
How that happened. That's pretty much how that happened. And a good friend of mine, Cyrus Peters, played drums, and another good friend of mine, Pete Cisson, played bass. Met a lot of cool people. It was a really crappy experience with the studio and the studio owner. Other than that, I met a lot of other cool people that came down and did some recording in there. And, yeah, so that's pretty much that. It was. We should have changed the name of the band, for sure.
What happened to Bill and Terry?
The band disbanded, and to be honest with you, same thing that Cam said to Terry when they went out in 07 and did all that stuff. He just said he wasn't going to ever do Massacre Game with Bill and Terry. If we do it, it's going to be me and you, and we'll get somebody else to play drums and play bass. So, like I said, he was my high school buddy. Well, I'm going to say, no, dude, let's just keep. And I tried.
I guess.
It's not like I didn't try and say, dude, you know, and he just, nah. But yeah. Then he did the same thing with me. You know, Kelly said he asked, what about Rick? And he's like, nah, I don't want to work with that guy. Okay. Who knows? Whatever, dude. I'm the bad seed, man. I'm the man with a big ego. I'm such a rock star. Nobody gets along with me. Help me, dude. Can you help me?
Well, not from what I'm hearing. But
I'm good. That was a joke. Look, why I said that, I have no idea.
So beyond the Tyrants of Death demo compilation, that was pretty much the last we heard of you until this year. You know, there's some rumblings here and there of a Massacre reformation, but I don't believe anything really ever came of it, certainly nothing on record. So what finally brought you and Terry Butler back together, and what happened with Cam?
I have no idea. I was out of the metal scene 17 years, bro. I put a rock band together here locally in Orlando called Flow, F-L-O, and that was, you know, about 4 years, 5 years of my career that was here locally playing, like, it's kind of like heavy rock. It was kind of like Soundgarden meets, like, a Sabbath meets a Alice in Chains. It was heavy, you know, tuned down, and but with really kick-ass vocals as far as I think, you know what I mean? It's like, I'm a really singer that can, but it wasn't cheesy to me. And then I did another band called Shine, which is probably the lowest part of me ever being in a band. That was another 4 years. So that's 8 out of 17. I was doing a lot of home improvement on the side, you know, painting, drywall, that kind of stuff, and playing here and there and blah, 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 blah. And then I got a wild hair and put this project called M Inc. together, M Incorporated, and I was able to jam with this drummer, Mike Mazzanetto, who's playing in Masker now, that I've been wanting to jam with for like 17 years. And we have a lot of history together, and there's a lot of the stories really cool, how his band opened up for like one of Death's first shows as with me, Chuck, Bill, and Terry. He came out to the first show that we did, and then the second show, his band opened for us. So anyway, and he was in a local band called Pain Principle for like 16 years, and we ended up jamming together. And so M Inc. was put together, and that's how I got back into metal, doing the M Inc. thing. It was a little more modern vocal. It wasn't a death metal vocal. It was more of like a, not really Anselmo, but in that vein, I guess. We have 11 songs recorded already, and the studio owner plays bass, and his friend, they were in a band together for 10 years called Devolve. Jack is singing on that, and Timmy Vasquez is playing bass. So that was going on about 3 years. On Facebook, you know, me and Terry are friends, and somebody had mentioned, I mean, it goes as simple as this, bro. Some guy mentioned in a message on Facebook and just said, hey, Terry, you and Cam put Masker back together back in 07, blah, blah, blah. Why don't you and Rick find a singer and put Masker together now? And then there was a little note from Terry that said, hey, Rick, you know a singer? Seriously. And I did. So that's how that all came about, pretty much, and it just escalated.
That's where I was going to go next, because I was going to say you brought over Mike Mazzanetto from your as-yet-unrecorded project, M Incorporated, and a fellow named Ed Webb, who seems to have been in a few bands I'm unfamiliar with. He does a good job on the vocals, though. I actually thought it was Cam when I first heard it. Somewhere between Cam and, like, George Corpse Grinder Fisher from Cannibal Corpse. So where did you find him?
Right. To be honest with you, I put a little show together here in Orlando, and it was going to be M Inc.'s debut. And Ed was playing, singing and playing bass in a band called Destined to Ruin, and I had them on the bill. Never heard the band, didn't know any of the guys. I was going with a friend of mine in Tampa, Death Metal Dave, hooked me up with some bands. Coincidentally, that night, the M Inc. drummer, Mike Mazzanetto, had his baby. You know, fiance, they had their baby that night, right when we were supposed to play at 10 o'clock.
Wow.
He's in the emergency room, and she's giving birth. So M Inc.'s not playing.
So right.
I go inside, and, you know, obviously. So I go inside and I check out Destined to Ruin. And there's no Masker thought at all at this time. None. That hasn't even been spoken about. I haven't talked to Terry, so there's not even a thought. I'm watching this guy kick ass. Great voice for death metal and just a great metal voice. Gutturals, screams, just got different levels of everything. And he's playing bass and pretty complex stuff. And not looking at the neck. And I was like, God damn, this guy's a badass. So I'm not even thinking about jamming with the guy or anything like that. I just actually watched the band and blah, 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 blah. So months and months go down the road. And then, you know, this little message on Facebook happens with me and Terry. And I'm thinking in my head. And actually, Chris Jack from M Inc. was the first one that came to mind, who actually never really jammed. He had just had a new baby, too. So that stuff happened. And I was like, So I had Destined to Ruin's guitar player Damien's phone number. So I gave Damien a call. I'm like, hey, man, do you think your singer, I didn't even know his name, do you think your singer would be interested in coming out and auditioning, kind of jamming with Masker? And I've got some stuff going on. I got a chance to go to Europe and do some stuff, and I think he'd come out and want to learn the From Beyond stuff. So he called him, and we ended up getting in touch and finally ended up coming out. He had some songs ready, came out and nailed them. Sounded great. You know, I haven't played those songs in forever. But we tuned that a little bit lower now, so it's a little heavier, and Mikey adds a lot of, you know, no disrespect to Billy, just adds a lot of dimension and different stuff to the songs. Now they're a little modernized, and yeah, it's great. We're just going with it.
You're listening to Third Eye Cinema with our special guest tonight, Rick Ross. Coming up, we talk Condemned to Shadows. We're on Third Eye Cinema. Thank you.
evil wizard.
Wow, that was great. Can you do one in the pirate voice?
Sure, I could be Captain Chris from Aelstorm if you want that.
Sure.
God, that's all I do is put on fucking accents all day long. Ahoy there, shipmates. This is Chris from Aelstorm, and you're listening to Third Eye Cinema. Yar.
Well,
I hate myself.
No, that was great. I can't tell you how much I appreciate that.
Okay, you ready?
Go for it.
Hey, Metalheads, this is Sandy Sledge from Sledge Leather, and you're listening to Third Eye Cinema. Turn it up and metal up. Wait, let me do that again. Okay, ready? Hey, Metalheads, this is Sandy Sledge from Sledge Leather, and you're listening to Third Eye Cinema. Turn the radio up. Fuck. Oh, it's not a radio. Okay. What are they listening to? There's a computer. Okay, I got an idea. Okay, here we go. Hey, Metalheads, this is Sandy Sledge from Sledge Leather. You're listening to Third Eye Cinema. Crank it. Metal up! There you go.
Hi, here's Matt Sinner of Primal Fear and Sinner, and you're listening to Third Eye Cinema.
This is Greg Higgins from Venomous Maximus talking on Third Eye Cinema. You haven't seen anything yet.
And in our final segment, we talk The Masquer Reunion with Condemn the Shadows. But first, this is one more of From Beyond. This is Dawn of Eternity.
You were kind of hinting around already about Condemn the Shadows. When you hear this, your extra fat riffing and that crazy Worry of Our Souls are still there. But why the decision to release as an old school 7-inch vinyl 45 rather than as like a CD? Because I know that sort of retro thing's like a bit of a comeback with the kids, but it kind of limits it to a certain audience of audiophiles.
That is completely Century Media Records. No disrespect, I think it's great and novelty, the vinyl. But like I said, we signed a deal on the 70,000 tons of metal pretty much as a handshake thing. You know, we played one new song. We didn't even have the other one written yet. We wrote back from beyond. And so I contacted Century Media, and I was like, hey, Jens in particular at Century Media. I'm talking to Jens, and I'm like, hey, we're getting ready to go and do Falcon. So I'm like, hey, how about we do a... I'm not talking sales here, bro, okay? How about we do a sample CD and hand it out at Bakken to do some promo for the new band. You know, I'm talking free handout, just hand out here, see, new master. He immediately went and said, I'm not ripping on those guys, I'm just telling you what he said. He went business right off the bat, but I wasn't talking sales. Oh, no, CD singles, they don't sell anymore, they're no good. We're going to do, we'll do a 7-inch, two-song 7-inch, colored vinyl, black vinyl, yellow vinyl. I'm like, I was flattered. I'm like, oh, okay. And that's it. Done. Wow. Done deal. We had the songs already recorded, and we sent them to him, and we got an artist friend of mine, Richard Shulton, that I know on Facebook to do the, he did some M-Ink work for me, and then got to do the 7-inch, he's going to do the full length, and we're going to do another 7-inch, which I won't talk about right now.
Right.
But yeah, it's just going to be novelty factor, man. We've got some cool stuff coming up. That's the way I look at it, you know what I mean? But I agree with you. I agree. It totally limits the audience, but, and they sold it out in like 2 weeks, you know, it was like 600 copies printed, so they sold out 600 copies of the 7-inch in 2 weeks. Not too shabby.
No, it isn't.
Because they're all sold out now.
Right, exactly. Even when I contacted you, it was sold out. I'm like, okay. You know, it definitely has that kind of a, I don't want to say hipster, but, you know, that kind of a cachet to it, because the kids nowadays seem to really be into vinyl again. But like I said, it limits the audience because, you know, most of us, we either listen to MP3s on iPods or something like that, or we're still into CDs. So to my ears, anyway, being an old schooler, I was like, why are we going back to vinyl?
I was told that the vinyl factories have never been busier in Europe.
Wow.
Because like I said, man, that's strictly label.
Right.
100%. That was their idea.
So is this a teaser for an upcoming full length, I hope? Or is this more a case of just testing the waters?
Oh, no, no. There's no testing the waters. We're putting a full... We signed a record deal. We're putting a full length record out. 11 songs coming next year, for sure.
Awesome.
Oh, yeah. All brand new stuff. And yeah, it's going to be cool. I'll even tell you. We're going to do a little 7-inch with... Nah, I'm not going to tell you. It's going to be... but there's going to be... there'll be at least 10 brand new songs. But Succumb to Rapture and Back from Beyond will be on the record, but they will be re-recorded. We're keeping those two. Those songs were just put out, but we are keeping them because it's the title of the record. So Back from Beyond needs to be on Back from Beyond. So they'll just be recordings from that session with the other 8 songs.
Well, unless you were going to go the docking around and do Back for the Attack and don't put the song on the record. I remember they
exactly.
came out that record. I'm like, wow, at least they got that song on it because the rest of the album sucks. And it wasn't there.
It was the best song out. I'll tell you, right.
Exactly. But anyway.
But definitely a full length, Back from Beyond 2013 for sure.
Awesome. It's kind of a silly question to ask, with so many of the old acts making some long overdue comebacks of late, but do you find it any different playing this kind of music in your mid-40s?
No, man, it's fun. Plus the people I'm doing it with, it's great. No, I don't even think about that when I'm playing.
And
I don't think about it really at all. Every once in a while I'll think about my age, but I don't feel too bad. And you know, it's fun. It really is. It's fun. Nobody's freaking laughing at me. And if they were, I wouldn't care either.
All right, whatever. That's the good thing about
exactly.
You don't really give a damn.
I just spit on, so laughter's okay.
So, and how about the audiences? Because I imagine it's more comprised of young guys who've been discovering the real deal over the internet and through interest in more recent, if somewhat, maybe a little lesser acts and don't use an influence. Because, you know, it's not uncommon to see guys in their 60s going to see like a Rolling Stone show or Pat Benatar or something like that. But when you start getting into the more aggro underground stuff like punk and metal, most guys already kind of drop out and become yuppies or something.
Right, but the generations are coming around, I'll tell you that. I mean, we just did some stuff over in South America, and it was, talk about passion for metal, man, wow. I was blown away. And you're getting your time, talking 13, 14 to 40.
I mean, even in my case, it's not the only thing I listened to either, but, you know, it never was. Even back then, there was a lot less of us back then in the underground, and first thrash, then death and black metal were reasonably obscure and put most guys who called themselves metalheads off in the first place. But, you know, it's a lot different than things nowadays.
No, definitely.
So, looking back, how huge of an influence would you say you personally had on music today with Mantis, Death, and Massacre?
I don't know. You flattered the crap out of me the whole time we went on the phone, so I don't know. I don't I don't look at it like that at all, man. If I had an influence on anybody, that's flattering. Because that's the only reason why I'm doing this, because it goes back from my influences from Steve Miller and Ace Frehley to Tony Iommi to Kerry King. You know what I mean? So that's the only reason why I'm playing music. And if people don't play music and they dig it, and they're just, then that's great. But it's, I'm not a solo artist. It takes a full band to make it happen. But I'm flattered, man. But I don't look at it like that at all. I never have. I can't. It doesn't make any sense to me. I'm like, oh, well, I've influenced that guy. And okay.
You're also involved with a Florida-based internet radio podcast, which is Metal Messiah Radio. How did that come about?
With the M Inc. thing, I just started, you know, I came across some of the Metal Messiah Radio people, and they were really, really cool, and they were playing some of the tunes, and I was hanging out in the chat room a lot, and and then the owner of the station contacted me one day and asked me if I wanted to have my own little show, and I was like, sure, man, I'll try it out. So he gave me little tips and showed me how to work the thing from, you know, it's all from home, you know what I mean?
Right.
And, I've been doing it like 3 years now, I think. Started in 2010. And I take days and I take time off here and there, blah, blah, blah. But it's great, man. It's fun. I meet a lot of people. It's really good promotion for whatever projects you're doing or anything you want to promote for a friend or anything like that. It's really cool. And it's worldwide. So, and it's fun. And I've thought about getting into radio when I get a little older, but probably won't be like metal radio or anything like that. So,
yeah.
I'm thinking smooth jazz, like midnight, you know, some real soft stuff. Yeah.
So, do you have any tour plans coming up for the stage? You said 2013 we can expect a new Masquer album. Do you have a date for that?
No. I mean, it should have been out like really early 13, but it's not going to happen. Safely to say summer, but definitely, I could be wrong on that, but definitely mid-year sometime. It could be earlier than that. I really don't know. It's just, we'll see what happens. We're not going to rush it. The label's not really rushing us on it. They, you know, they want us to take our time because it is kind of like, it's a really important record for the band and we want to make it as best as possible. So, as tours will be, they'll be mad touring, man, for sure. At least two tours of the States, you know what I mean, in 13 at least. You know, whatever little festivals we're invited to, if anything like that happens. But we're definitely going to, we're going to stay real busy. And there should be some really good packages going out, too. Some really cool stuff going on. Awesome. Central Media's picking up a lot of Florida death metal, so there'll be some Florida death metal tour action going on.
Awesome. Looking forward to it.
That's what I'm looking forward to. Yeah, me too. I've got a really good feeling about a couple of things. So I think it's going to be a really good year as long as everybody stays healthy and is alive and everything's cool. I think it's going to, you know, because you never know, man.
I know, it's true.
You never know.
But
yeah, man, I'm really looking forward to everything. So it's really cool. Really out of the blue. Very unplanned. Yeah, I had no idea, dude. Even when we did that cruise of 70,000 tons of metal, when I ran into Robert, the owner of Central Media Records, who I met back in 87 on tour with his band Despair when they opened for, was it Death? Yes, it was Death. And he just started Central Media Records, and he put his band out on there, Despair, on Central Media. And then I ran into him and Jens, his right-hand man, and it didn't even cross my mind once, bro, that, oh, man, Central Media Records is here. We're going to be, we're kind of showcasing. I had no idea. It didn't even cross my mind. Terry came up to me and goes, hey, Central Media wants to sign the band. And I kind of chuckled, like, really? Because the cruise was as much out of the blue as that happening. We got a call, like, Wednesday, and the cruise set sail on Monday, thanks to Trevor Perez from Obituary, put in a little word to the promoter, and they needed a band. And guess what? Masquer got the gig freaking 4 or 5 days before it set sail. So we're like, got to call Ed and Mike. Hey, you guys got to take time off from work, man. We're going away for 5 days. And then we get a record deal. Are you kidding me? It was
That's
like the lottery, dude.
You get a vacation, you go on the cruise, you get some nice food, maybe pick up some chicks, you get to play and get a record deal.
Oh, it was killer. And then you get a record deal. Are you kidding me? And it was it's a pretty decent deal, man. You know, they really, I think it's a really good deal for what's going on, you know. I can't complain for a 45-year-old guy. Like I said, I'm just going with it. We're going to put a strong record out. That's the plan, cut and dry, and just go with it.
Awesome. Do you have anything you'd like to plug right now, or did you want to point listeners to your website or Facebook page?
I don't even – the Masquer Facebook page is, like, so messed up. I mean, you could find it just on the Masquer, but there's, like, a bunch of numbers after it, so it's not like I can give you, like, the correct thing. But I just set it up when I did it. Yeah, I'm just learning. I'm computer illiterate, but I'm kind of, like, becoming, like, a madman at networking. But as far as – other than that, not really, man. Just look forward to Back From Beyond. You know, from Masquer in 2013, that's definitely coming out. I look forward to M Inc.'s release, Taste of Hate, 2013 sometime. And I'm also have a little rock project that I'm doing with the old Flow drummer I was telling you about, Lucky Erickson, a band called The Ride. That's pretty much about it. My main focus is Masquer and Back From Beyond in 2013 and touring and kicking some butt.
Well, with that, Rick, I'd like to thank you again for joining us here on Third Eye Cinema. And we'd love to have you back on to talk to the album when it comes out.
Hey, and I thank you for having me. I really appreciate it, and I'm sorry if I babbled on five a little bit for you.
Not at all. All right, so again, much appreciated, and I definitely look forward to talking to you again in the new year.
No, definitely, man. Anytime. No, it's my pleasure.
All right, take care, Rick. Good night.
You do the same, bro. Peace.
And to close out our interview with Rick, this is a track off Condemn the Shadows, Succumb to Rapture. Desi Metal Special with Nolan Lewis and Rohit Chaturvedi of Kryptos and John Progressive Chakra. If you'd like to contact us here, comments, suggestions, or you're a filmmaker or musician like to join us on air, email us at thirdeyecinema@hotmail.com, visit our website, thirdeyecinema.wordpress.com, or our Facebook page, facebook.com/thirdeyecinema. Third Eye Cinema brought to you by the Big Papa Online Network on Blog Talk Radio. missed any part of this or any other Third Eye Cinema broadcast, just visit our website or Facebook page for links to the shows in question. All Blog Talk Radio shows are available for archive listener download at your convenience. Next week...
Hi, here's Matt Sinner of Primal Fear and Sinner, and you're listening to Third Eye Cinema.
And in 2 weeks...
Hi, everyone. This is Nolan from Kryptos. You're listening to Third Eye Cinema. Was that good? Hi, everyone. This is Nolan Lewis from Kryptos, and you're listening to Third Eye Cinema.
Hi, guys. This is Rohit there from Kryptos, and you're listening to Third Eye. Okay, I'll say that again. Okay. Hi, this is Rohit from Kryptos, and you're listening to Third Eye Cinema.
Yeah. Melon.
Melon.
Yeah, and all that cliche stuff.
Hi, guys. This is Chom Prakash from Chakra, and you are listening to Third Eye Cinema. Stay tuned.
Up to 70% off. That's right, at Court Furniture Clearance Center. Get up to 70% off new retail prices and choose from a wide variety of previously leased furniture and decor for your home or office. Sofas from $199.99, bedroom sets from $399.99, dining sets from $299.99, and more. All items are Court certified, guaranteed, and in stock, ready for delivery or to take home today. Make the smart choice and visit one of our 5 locations in the DMV or go online at courtclearancefurniture.com. Mention Radio 20 and get 20% off.